number one independent television network presents the following sports exclusive.
A crowd of close to 50,000 people is waiting to see not a football game, but America's fastest growing sport, professional soccer.
Soccer became a carnival of picnics, parties, togetherness.
Hello and welcome to
More Than a Game.
Edition
it became a habit.
Sounders Radio Hour.
Hi.
I'm your host. Hardy, and alongside me, Will Pearson, Ben Johnson. Hello, boys. It's been a while. When we last spoke, we were setting up the season preview for the season. We gave all of our predictions, and here we are in the playoffs. It's like we were drinking, we blacked out, and we woke up later. What happened? So right now, just for the people that are listening on delay, the Sounders are in the middle of their Houston Western Conference final two-legged series. And they're heading into the home leg, second home leg, with a 2-0 victory from a 2-0 road heroic effort. And they're looking really good. I mean, knock wood, but like, it was one of those like professional experiences that I haven't really seen a lot from the Sounders where they just took care of business. Like that was kind of the phrase that kept coming in my head. They controlled the possession. They took advantage of their opportunities, save for a missed penalty by Lodiero. But for the most part, things are looking really great going into Thursday's second leg against the Dynamo. So I guess the question is,
you remember how bad they were
a success
in the middle of the season? The Sounders were bad for a while.
No, they
and then they
bad.
Got good.
They were worse than bad. Mm-hmm. They were boring.
Yeah.
Like
yeah,
we were really still, bad. We were getting results, but it was like, God, it was terrible. It's like take the ball wide, make an overlapping run and stand 5 feet away from the guy with the ball. Lump in across to the center backs and watch it get cleared away. Rinse, repeat.
So, Will, what changed?
I think we got Victor Rodriguez.
That helps.
Yeah. Yeah, he's been pretty solid. Leerdam, also a great pickup. I don't know the specific statistic, but the Sounders have been fairly incredible ever since he's joined the squad. Really shoring up that right wing position, or excuse me, right back position, and allowing Jones to play left mid because it just moves everyone around. And then you got to look at, I think, just the solid play of Gustav Svensson, World Cup hero. And I think the Svensson thing, while seemingly not important, has really allowed the Sounders to weather Ozzie Alonso's injury issues. And you could say the same thing about Victor spelling the Sounders with Jordan Morris out. But yeah, it just looks like one of those solid teams, top to bottom, really deep, that can weather a few injuries. I think there was a lot of hoopla or ridiculousness from Portland Timbers fans just complaining about all the injuries that they had. I don't think it's on the same level, but the Sounders have also had their share of injuries, but they haven't really, they haven't been tripped up by it. So pretty impressive stuff.
I think that each year we see multiple teams get hit with the injury bug. And I guess my question is point me to a team that hasn't had a season where they've lost people to injuries. And I think that that's just like, that's a factor of the league that we're in, right? I mean, you're playing 34 games across the course of a long ass season. Mm-hmm. You're playing like across multiple time zones. You're playing across like a multitude of climates and the field conditions are pretty variable. Like, I guess I don't have sympathy when teams complain like, oh no, everyone got hurt. It's like, well, they did, and that sucks, but I'm not surprised.
And so along those lines, then, that's part of good team building and team management. The Sounders, over the last 3, 4, 5 years, get into the playoffs. And with the exception of what, last year, Ozzie Alonso was hurt. And the team, you know, got into the playoffs but then struggled to advance. And so the team brought in Svensson, who's sort of a good, you know, was a backup, but now is maybe supplanted Ozzie in that defensive midfielder role. And correlate that or compare that to Portland, who is something ridiculous without Diego Chara. They're like 0-50 without him in the lineup, you know? And then they...
Is that the stat of the week?
No, there's another stat of the week coming up later. That's just a teaser stat. 0-50. 0-50,000 without Diego Chara in the lineup. But the Timbers never really got anybody to fill in that role, right? They weren't good at sort of shuffling things around to make it happen. So it's a testament to coaching.
I will not sit here and allow you to impugn upon the integrity of Ben Zemanski.
Big Ben Z.
non-roster player, Ben Zemanski, who just got let go, by the way. Tough week for Ben. No, it kind of reminds me, Ben, of the Supporters Shield team from a couple years ago with Papa and Kenny Effencooper. Just lots of depth, right? Like,
oh, yeah.
I think you saw that at the beginning of the offseason when they went after, I think on the same day, Harry Shipp and Will Bruin. And, of course, the Sounders fan base was saying things like, I don't want to mischaracterize, but like, is this the big move here, you know? And I recall kind of the same experience with when they picked up Kenny Cooper. And so it's like these mid-tier signings that maybe don't really move the needle in a huge way, like a DP signing, but they kind of fill the squad out and allow you to go extended periods without a Jordan Morris, without an Ozzie Alonso, without, you know, some of these other mid lineup players and keep moving. And I think that's what you've seen the Sounders do this year is just kind of, I think they just hit this point in the middle of the season when they finally got Roman Torres healthy and kind of clicking where they just weren't giving up goals. And so I want to say the Sounders are, knock on wood, but like unbeaten since like the middle of the season, pretty much when they have Marshall and Torres both playing together. So that's pretty impressive stuff. And though, you know, the Thursday match, they won't have Torres due to, yellow card accumulation. Doesn't really appear that that's going to be much of an issue because guys have just been stepping up all year. So now whether that, we can transition a little bit to talk of the other side of the conference. We've got Toronto and Columbus on the other side of the bracket. Do you guys think that this squad can tackle a Toronto or a Columbus?
Sure. I mean, I have no reason
yes.
to not believe in them.
What's the Sounders' big weakness on defense? It's not crosses, because both Marshall and Torres are good in the air. It's probably if the midfield gets stretched out or pulled out of the position and then speedy guys can come running up through the middle, I would think, to pull Marshall or Torres or clean sheet Tony out of position.
Dirty diaper, Tony.
Yeah, so I would maybe worry more. I don't know. I might worry more about Toronto with that. Within that regard, because Giovinco loves to run those channels, and Josie is really adept at coming back to receive the ball and turning and passing. He's not that big aerial threat, you know, even though he's a big, big, huge dude.
He's a little top heavy, though.
He's top heavy. Well, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you know, like he's just got so much upper body mass. Like his balance is just terrible. The man goes down like a stiff breeze, and poor Josie, he just can't stay on his feet.
Are you referring to
When he got hit by Hurricane Clutch.
But then I think a lot of those games where they got hit on the counter like that, that was with another combo besides Marshall and Torres. I feel like this lineup has a really great ability to send guys forward, have players like Roldan and Svensson cover for those players. And then Torres and Marshall stay home in a great way and kind of cover for everyone. So, yeah, it's like it's a pretty solid defense. And I think that's kind of been the backbone. I think they've had issues scoring at times this year, especially with Morris out and transitioning to different types of offensive players. But, yeah, on the whole, a defense-first squad, really. So I could just to answer the question, I think that the Sounders could absolutely go into Toronto and get a really gross, disgusting, crazy result like they did last year. I see no reason why they couldn't. And this year they'll have Dempsey potentially. So I don't mean to overlook the next match, but just looking on the other side of the bracket, you know. I think the big issue that, because, you know, obviously we're very focused on this series right now. But I think there's a lot of neutrals around the league that just don't really give a shit about this series, about the other series, because it's been like, I mean, it was almost a month, really, with that FIFA break in the middle of the playoffs. I mean, the Sounders had 21 days to sell tickets between the, I think, November 9th matchup at home versus Vancouver and Thursday's November 30th matchup. And for a lot of the neutrals, they're starting to tune out a little bit. They're focusing on the new breed of U.S. men's national team players. And I mean, there's been this kind of joke tweet that I've seen multiple times by different people, which is, I had no idea the MLS season was still going, you know? So the question is, are the playoffs too long? Like, do they need to fix this issue?
I don't think they're too long. They're just too spread out, you know? If you can jam them together so you don't have a 21 gap between, you know, home playoff games, that would go a long way towards solving some of this issue. You know, I think the other side of the coin is, like, are you providing people with, like, a meaningful, like, enjoyable matchup that a neutral would want to watch? Because if it was, I don't know, San Jose and the New England Revolution, I probably wouldn't care.
You don't want to see Lee Nguyen versus Tommy Thompson?
Well, I mean, if they bring out that Frisbee dog at halftime, I'd watch, but...
Well, yeah, Tommy is the Frisbee dog in this case. So I'm going to go counterpoint.
Oh, in that case, I would absolutely.
I'm going to give you a little bit of a counterpoint on this. Ratings are up almost 20%. And some of this has to do with, like, novel scheduling in the middle of the week versus competing directly with college football and the NFL on the weekends. So that's one thing. And the other thing is it gives the league a lot of time to sell tickets to these matchups. I think in years past, we've seen, you know, these are big, huge, quote unquote, like playoff games that the league is heading into. And you watch the game on TV and it's like half the stadium is not filled because they only had a handful of days to sell tickets. So I think from a league perspective, you know, there are bonuses to spreading it out like this, but from a competition standpoint, I kind of agree that they need to do something about this momentum issue, because if you're not a fan of, like, you know, the Crew, Toronto, Seattle, or Houston, it's kind of like, who gives a shit? And also, oddly, the league just starts to schedule all the off-season stuff during the playoffs so that, and I know Will gets excited because all of the, like, roster stuff starts to happen right in the middle of the conference finals. We learned
awesome.
Today and yesterday, like, these guys are leaving, these guys are staying. And all of a sudden you start playing fantasy soccer in the off season when we still have a game in 2 days. So consolidating that, like, enthusiasm might be a good thing for the league, I think. Anything to add, guys?
Just adding that the play in the first game of the conference finals is typically really rusty, and I think that even if you get more people watching the game, they're more likely to turn it off. You know, I had some family in town for Thanksgiving week, and I made them watch Toronto-Columbus. Well, I didn't make them watch, but I put it on, right? But I had to give them a fair warning, even more so than regular soccer, that this is probably going to end 0-0, right? Because right. It's the two-legged thing where the first leg is almost always conservative. I'm glad the Sounders weren't all that conservative in their game in Houston. But
they were in Vancouver.
But they were in Vancouver, and typically teams are very conservative. And so it was a bummer because I wanted to watch that game because of the crew drama, which we'll talk about more later. But harder to get people, even if they maybe will tune in because it's an off night, I think they're more likely to flip the channel if game is rusty and boring like that, because they can be pretty slow and chippy.
You make a good point that like getting people to watch soccer in the first place is difficult, and then when you create these matchups that are just conservative, kind of fill the box up stuff, like that's, you know, these playoffs are always an opportunity for casual people to kind of sample the league and, you know, okay, this is the biggest that this league has to offer, like show me your shot, you know. And in this case, it's like just this Carl Robinson like bullshit in the first leg where the home team, when you really need to capitalize on, especially Vancouver, just didn't go for it at all. And so ended up, I think it was the least offensive game in Major League playoff history. And as a result, probably the most offensive game in Major League Soccer playoff history. Get what I'm saying here? Yeah.
Nice. Yeah. I see that.
Okay, so can I ask a question here then?
Yeah.
What does it take to get more games like the Toronto-Montreal series from last year?
Good question.
Because those games were fun. Like, you had packed stadiums, you had drama, you had, like, lots of goals. It was end-to-end. Is that a product of the play style? Is it a product of the players that you have available? Or, do we just need to establish that culture?
I mean, some of that was just that wonderful rivalry. I mean, those two teams had never faced off in the playoffs before, so the fans were effing jacked up about it.
Why didn't we have that in the Columbus-Toronto? I mean, I will point out they have the historic Trillium Cup.
Trillium
rivalry.
Cup. Trillium Cup.
You have this team that's going through all sorts of we're about to not exist anymore drama, playing against arguably the best team of all time. And, I mean, Sam, you said this the other day where Toronto's not playing against Columbus. They're playing against, like, the idea of Columbus in an essence because there's so much passion and emotion behind them.
I mean, that's the neutral fan. We talked earlier about, like, all the neutral fans aren't watching. If they are, they're all cheering for Columbus, right?
Are they?
Yeah, I think they are. This is like a – this is an FU because I think the idea is there's this – wonderful, sexy moment in the future Sliders universe, which is Don Garber handing the trophy to Anthony Precourt to a chorus of boos in Columbus in MLS Cup final. Like that would be a pretty messed up like moment. Sorry, Will, I cut you off, but I think I think the neutrals are cheering for Columbus.
Disagree with nothing to back up my statement.
Who are they cheering for? Give me the alternate. Yeah, hey. They're not cheering for Toronto.
Why not?
Because that's like they're the heels. They've turned heel. And they're like now you're a wrestling guy. Like Josie Altidore is like going at like Sasha Kleist.
Yeah, he's your heel, but then so you're saying that the crew are the baby face?
I'm saying the crew of the teams left. It's not Houston. Because
Houston's the weird tag team duo that no one cares about.
Ooh, I like this.
And then like
nobody likes Seattle per the ECS chant. No one likes us. Boo hoo hoo. That's not how it goes, but you know what I mean. So that leaves, I think it's kind of by default, it's Columbus.
But
plus there's the hashtag Save the Crew movement.
Are neutrals watching these games saying, boy, I sure hope they win? Or are they doing the spite watch where you go, ugh, man, I just don't want anyone to win. I'm unhappy with all of this. I'm watching, I'm going to be disgusted, I'm going to turn it off, and I'm going to get on the Twitters, and I'm going to send out the tweets about how garbage this league is, and I'm going to follow Deadspin and agree with all of his, like, you know, hack writing.
I'm gonna bleep that out, by the way, the mention of his name, but we shall mention the comment about Deadspin.
That's fair.
Yeah, but like, yeah, so I feel like it saved the crew. I feel like the neutrals are, Ben, back me up on this. Like,
no, I'm with you, Sam. I'm with you on this one. Plus with Toronto you have that added angst of the U.S. not making the World Cup manifested in Michael Bradley and Josie Altidore. And so that is totally, totally against a neutrals or like a Deadspin type fan who's watching the league, right? So, I don't know about it, Will. I mean, your take is not so much that they're rooting against Columbus and that they're reveling in some of the misfunction of MLS and how the league
it
is
would be
weird
the
in a lot of ways. And that's part of the charm if you look at it
go ahead,
right
Will.
Way,
sorry.
I think.
Well, I was just going to say, I guess maybe to reframe it, I feel like neutral fans don't root for other teams so much as they root against things. So I guess, Ben, what you're saying is people aren't rooting for Columbus, they're rooting against the league.
It's a very pessimistic view.
Yeah.
Oh, I actually think people are rooting for Columbus.
Now?
I'm a more
positive
guy.
They've gone through so much.
But you can't root for a team.
Why now?
That you know,
because of all the shit that's going on.
Only because they're being moved, and you go, "Oh, I feel sad. You guys are. Oh no, but save the crew." And it's like, no, it's the same stuff that happened with the Sonics.
What?
Like, oh, the Sonics get sold, and all of a sudden, everyone gets out their Sonics gear and says, "Oh no, you can't take them away from us." And it's like, listen, you jerks never went to the games. Like, Key Arena was a ghost town. Like, yeah.
Well, I think you're agreeing with us, but you're questioning,
you
like,
go
the why,
to...
which makes sense. But I feel like it's, people are just kind of like, go Columbus, because it's the underdog story. The fans are slighted, and they're coming out of the woodwork in support of Save the Crew. I mean, if you go on Reddit right now, everyone's changing their, like, their flair, the little logo that's next to their name. To be like a yellow crew logo. What's that?
I'm not hip like that.
Okay. Well, it's just what I'm saying is it seems to be casual support for the Save the Crew movement. So let's use this to transition. It's kind of weird that we're providing takes on it because it's moving very quickly. But the latest is that it appears that Anthony Precourt, the owner of the Crew, has completely lined up this Austin situation where he's moving the team. And it seems kind of, even though not all the T's are crossed and I's are dotted with regard to the stadium deal and all that stuff, it seems like he wants to move it full stop, and barring some sort of crazy, like, you know, assemblage of a free stadium, just like a sweetheart deal, it's going to happen. So this is caused, you know, this huge Save the Crew movement, at least in soccer circles, where, you know, the city feels slighted. They're trying to come up with like a situation where, I don't know, where they can somehow keep the team. And it, you know, I think that it's also kind of drafting off of this missing of the World Cup in the soccer community, where there's just a lot of, I think, melancholy and like upset and unrest and bad goodwill towards the game in this country that's kind of being pointed at Anthony Precourt. And it's just the continuing story. It's the Sonics. It's these other teams that have moved in the past where you know, fans are just like, this is, it's business over sport, you know? So I guess my question to you guys is like, is this a val? I mean, nobody likes to have a team moved, but Will, you kind of touched on it there. Like a year ago, 2 years ago, entering each season, you know, we would talk about the Crew as just this kind of like MLS 1.0 club. And so I think the two sides of the mouth that I'm hearing, and I'll let you guys talk after this, but the two sides of the mouth I'm hearing is A, you know, during these CBA discussions, all the fans are like, raise the salary cap, you know, do all this stuff. We need to be a bigger league. We need to finally compete with like the other leagues in Europe. That's one side of the mouth. The other side of the mouth is like, save the Crew. But I think if you really had, if you put a gun to everyone's head in the soccer community that really knew their stuff, is Columbus really part of that like MLS 5.6 like future? Are they a market in that league? Or are they like a St. Louis Spirits of the NBA that like are from a bygone era? It's kind of a rhetorical question. I'm curious what you guys think though.
There's a couple things to say about that. I think the first, sort of relating to what you said and to what Will said, is the similarity between what happened with, say, the Sonics and what's happening with the Crew is that it kind of came out of nowhere and people felt really lied to and taken advantage of, I think. And so that's part of the outcry for Save the Crew it comes off as a really shady deal. And I think that's a big deal for MLS. You know, you don't want to have that kind of pall cast over the league where it seems like these rich guys can, I mean, and they do that in leagues no matter what, but you don't want it to be so wanton and obvious like that, where they can just come in and sort of do whatever they want, whether it's good for the league or the team or the fans or not. About your question, Sam, I don't know. I think you have to reward in some way some of the original teams that have been around and have been trying to make MLS work. And Columbus is definitely one of those teams. They're an original team. They've been a successful team. I was looking at our season previews. I picked them to win the East. And so I think there is some, you know, recognition that I think their style of play is not MLS 1.0. You know, they've got some creative dudes on the team, and so they play a good style. And so I don't think it's the way the team plays. So it's unfortunately a money and business kind of decision, which is not a good look for the league. So I would hope that they stay there just based on rewarding that franchise for being an original member. But I don't know if you agree that they have a long-term future.
So what do you mean by rewarding the franchise?
I don't know. I mean, I know.
I mean, okay, so how did you feel when Chivas USA, rest in peace, passed on to the great goalie net in the sky?
I still felt pretty bad about it.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Their origins were so much less solidly.
It's a little different because that team was founded with a very specific target, like audience, right? They were founded to be the U.S. arm of Chivas in the Mexican League.
No, but I think you're right, Ben. Like the roots of Chivas were somewhat like ill-conceived in the first place. They're the secondary tenant at StubHub Center.
That's different, yeah.
What if we just got all the, you know, the Hispanic market inside the LA market to like follow the team? Yeah. Like that'll work and everyone will just come to the team in droves. Yeah. Like, no, like you have to be a little bit more thoughtful than that. And so conversely, you have Columbus with like a shared heritage with the U.S. men's national team. You know, the Dos Lacero game every 4 years is a big part of like national lore. And then it's a founding member of the team, or excuse me, of the league. So yeah, I think there's a lot of issues with like just throwing tradition out the door.
Well, yes and no, but when it stops working, then I think You know, like I think that we're having a very emotional response to the idea of the team moving. But, you know, like why are we not more excited for the Miami Fusion to come back? Because they were like a founding member, right? But that's like long dead and buried, so we have no vested interest in it, right?
It's always hard in MLS to compare two different eras, but I think that's a valid point, Will. And I don't know enough about why Tampa Bay and Miami folded when they did. And this is also, again, different than that, because this is moving a team to a city that hasn't really expressed interest in an MLS franchise, and it's not folding the team. So, I mean, I understand your point, and I think it's a good one. But it's difficult to compare. That's MLS like 0.5 or whatever, right? And this is now something that's happening sort of when we thought we were past this as a league. And so I think that's a lot of the frustration. It's a good point though, Will. I mean, I don't know enough about those Florida teams to know why I should be.
I mean, I think it's the same stuff. It's like, they're not making enough at the gate. Now it sounds like Columbus wasn't a terrible drawing team, but I think they had the cheapest tickets in the league. So that they weren't driving a ton of revenue. It was like the first soccer specific stadium in the United States, which means probably not a lot of gate from the luxury boxes, and the corporate issue. I think that one of the things that's a big part of this, I think, is I think the next era of this league is about like that television, the television ratings, local market television ratings, in terms of the contract that you have with a television station to broadcast around the region. And then also like, is this a big enough market that contributes to the league in a shared way, negotiating for a big, big television contract? And so when you're going to an ESPN or a Fox and you're saying, hey, like these are all the markets that you're going to be able to get your advertisers to focus on. And Columbus is on that list, and they're way down the list in terms of, you know, media market. And, you know, I think the counterpoint to this, though, is that I think Columbus fans would say, well, Precourt hasn't done shit to, like, market the team in the region. And he negotiated, like, the worst local television deal, to the point where, and this is not dissimilar from the Sonic situation, a lot of people couldn't even watch the games locally because it was on like a very specific like cable network. So I think the next, and you saw it too with Atlanta this year, that's kind of where the league wants to head. They want to head big, global, major, big corporate tie-ins, big names, lots of negotiating power. And they're just, it's not Tuesday night rainy in Columbus anymore. Like that's what the league wants to move away from. So I think that's kind of the narrative that is pushing Columbus out the door a little bit.
Yeah. The TV deals are a big thing. I was just looking at, for comparison, attendance in the Premier League and comparing that with average attendance for the Crew. The Crew draw about 17,000 fans per game officially, for what it's worth. And let's see, last year in the Premier League, Burnley drew 20,000. Like there's a handful of teams that draw about that same magnitude in the EPL. And so it's not the attendance so much that's the killer. I think it's the, right, like you say, Sam, it's the TV deal and all that that pumps money into the team and the league. Yeah. Should we talk about some fun stuff?
Sure.
Okay.
Yeah, let's do it.
Okay, here's my hot stat of the week. This is a pretty good one. So there's a decent chance this year that we get an MLS Cup Finals rematch, right? Toronto and Seattle. That's happened. That's possible, right? So that's happened twice before in MLS. In 2006 and 2007, Houston Dynamo played New England. Houston won both cups, so they repeated back to back. Similarly, in 2011 and 2012, the Galaxy repeated as champions. And here's the fun stat. So this is my moment of hope. If the Sounders and Toronto both get to the cup and they follow the pattern of the second championship game, there will be more goals scored in the second game than the first. Both, in the Houston Dynamo tied 1-1 with New England and went to overtime, and then they won 2-1 the next year. LA beat Houston 1-0 in their first matchup in the Cup and won 3-1 in the rematch. So everyone can rest easy that if there's a rematch, we won't have another 0-0 draw going to penalties. There will be more goals. This is based on rigorous historical precedent. Sample size 2.
So you're telling me that the haters will be hoping for some own goals so that the Sounders can once again win a championship without a shot on goal?
That'd be fine. Defense wins championship.
How do you guys feel about, I mean, I know we already kind of talked about this, but thinking about where we were last year with the team, going into, you know, conference championships, MLS Cup, like that team versus the team we have today, like, do you feel like we've significantly upgraded? Are we kind of neutral? Like who would win between Sounders today and Sounders last year?
Today, Sounders. Today. Definitely.
Because yeah, they would be attacking at Zach Scott?
Yeah, Zach Scott started a lot of games. Did he start in the finals? No.
Torres Dallas in both games, though.
That's right. So you've got...
But Dempsey wasn't even in that game.
Right.
But you had Jordan Morris.
Sub out... Yeah, but you also have Ivanchitz, who is like, I mean, he's okay, but on a cold night in Toronto in the middle of winter.
What about your boy Valdez with his hamstrings that were the equivalent of rubber bands left in the sun?
That's your boy.
No, I think if you do take into account Dempsey's absence, even with Morris out, I think that's like a net positive for this year's team. And then just like that, we talked about it earlier, but like, Mears is definitely not as good as Leerdam. And like Nuhu, he's probably maybe a slight downgrade over Jones. But then you have Jones, and we were singing this all year last year, Ben. Jones gets upgraded to left mid, which is like the best case scenario, because he can cover.
Upgrade.
If you need to send him back, he can cover defensively, but it doesn't make him the primary like guy stopping you. And actually, I think he's just fine moving forward. And his final ball has gotten so much better this year. Mm. He's been on the front end of a lot of goals this year. So
tasty. Yeah, I think there's no argument really based on the new guys that have come in, a healthy Dempsey. And Will Bruin has been playing
great.
Bruin. I
was
totally
skeptical. We haven't even really talked about
him. Of that signing. Yeah. But man, what a good year he's had. Like totally solid, scoring good goals, playing well. No problems. Yep. I know. Pleasant surprise.
I look forward to Will Bruin's offseason where he gets a tattoo of his own face and then becomes a national hero and has a stadium named after himself. Follow the Roman Torres route.
What? Oh. Yeah. Well, so can we extend this comparison even further? And there are some people out there. People are saying, unbelievable team, beautiful squad, best in history. Sorry, haters. What do you guys think? Is this the best Sounders team?
No.
In
I mean, if we follow the league narrative, every year should be the best team ever. You know, that this league slowly gets better. And I think where it makes it. So I will say, yes, it is the best team ever. And I will say why. And I think why is the middle to bottom part of the roster is just so much better now. Like Lamar Nagel, barely gets a minute. And he's like probably not too much worse than he was a couple of years ago.
Right.
It's just like one dimensional players like Nagel are no longer getting like primary run. And you're even seeing it. And Ben, I would love your follow up statistics on this, but it appears based on the way teams are releasing players right now, like in the after the 2017 season for the non playoff teams, it appears that. Yeah. Teams are very willing to just chop off the bottom half of their roster and upgrade in the middle with better talent from elsewhere.
Yeah. It does. I'll dig into that because that would be an interesting.
The question is like, is the churn more than, is it churn or is the league just trying to like refresh itself with better talent, you know?
Right. Will, you seem to disagree with Sam.
Ooh,
absolutely disagree. The greatest Sounders team that there was so far was 2015 when we won the Shield.
Is Papa better than
14?
Yeah.
Them, whenever.
Yeah.
How many playoff goals does Obafemi Martins have, Will?
Fewer than Gustav Svensson.
Right.
Okay, but so I guess this is turning into a rehash of the argument, like what metric are you measuring by? 2014, when we won the Shield, I think that we were one, a more entertaining team, and two, we produced more consistent results. Mm-hmm. I think that the team that we have this year is perhaps a little bit more defensively solid and has perhaps a slightly deeper bench and is looking like they will make it further in the playoffs.
I guess
from the eye test, I would rather watch the 2014 team every day of the week because they were fun and they were exciting.
But Will, there were so many games where it was the middle of the Sounders got cut with a knife, and it was everyone dumping the ball into Papa, Martins, and Dempsey up top and just hoping for magic. And you know what? And that magic was amazing to watch. But it's my opinion that that you had shinier objects on that team, but this year's team is like top to bottom just much more solid. So while I agree with you that they were much more fun to watch, I mean, I would not, if you held a gun to my head, I probably would not, well, that's a little bit hyperbole, but that Vancouver first leg was just not interesting to watch. Like, nobody enjoyed it. Even people who are fans of both teams didn't really enjoy it that much. But I think this is just a much more solid, like, club.
There are so many things that were. Hold on, I have to get. Sorry, my stove is beeping, so you might hear a beep. Well, I was just looking at the roster for that 2014 team again. Man, that's a fun team, right? Dempsey, Martins, Papa,
Yedlin. And then,
Yedlin was still around.
Chad Barrett.
That's fun. Leo Gonzalez, Chad Barrett was there. The thing that's missing is that midfield presence, right? We had Ozzy in his prime.
Roldan Pineda so
was
there. Good.
No, Roldan was busy not, playing left
Roldan
back
wasn't
that
there
year.
Yet. Oh yeah.
No. He wasn't even.
Oh, that was the next
no,
year.
He wasn't even there
that year. You guys are getting.
Eye yet.
That was next year.
I think Roldan is your Yedlin like replacement, like at a different position, but like young, shiny, up and coming, like right. national team player.
Yeah.
Maybe doesn't have quite the flash though that Yedlin did. Yedlin was so much fun though. Like, just like, what are you doing? Why are you going that far forward? And holy shit, now you have to run the whole field back to catch the guy, and you ended up doing it successfully. Yeah.
Just like then he did. Watching DeAndre Yedlin like run suicide sprints up and down the entire field.
Yeah. Do you know who else was on that team?
Eddie Johnson?
The 2014 team?
No, he left the year before with Shalrie Joseph.
Was Eddie Johnson gone? Right.
Yeah. An old and new friend, Jahlil Anibaba.
Oh yeah.
Ooh. Red carded on... Jahlil Anibaba.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Done us a favor.
Didn't he get red carded in the first leg?
Yeah. He did. He pulled down Jovan. He pulled down Jovan Jones, right, to get a red card and a penalty.
Mediocre players from Sounders Pass.
I know.
Colorado.
Who is the... Do you remember Aaron Johansson?
Of course.
See, that's the thing, is it was a lot of these like journeyman types that like... Again, on a cold night in Toronto, I'm not sure... Like, I feel pretty good about the legs on these players, besides Chad Marshall.
Yeah. He's a gamer, though.
Well, I would love to hear a hot take.
A hot take?
To heat things up in Seattle, because it sure is cold here.
I've got a whole bushel basket full of takes. Was there a subject in particular you wanted me to give you my opinion on?
Yeah, so we talked about the current active playoff teams. But let's look around the league for next year. In the spirit of the fact that the literal last episode we were previewing this season, who's your hot take team for next year that's gonna like surprise people?
San Jose. I think they made some really good signings this season. I think they've got some really fun people to watch. What's his name? Jameer Hika, I think. Scored one of the best goals I saw this season. Made Dallas look dumb. I think San Jose is going to have a sneaky dark horse, like kind of turn things around season. I think they just got a new coach. I think that they're gonna sort of reinvent themselves. I think they're gonna clear out some of their roster and figure out a game plan going forward.
Do you think Tommy will figure more prominently next year and with this Swedish coach?
I think he'll figure more prominently.
Oh,
I just don't
that's
think he'll do
hot.
With the earthquakes.
Oh,
that's spicy. Well, his option was picked up. So interesting. Okay, Will, that's a pretty hot take. San Jose to the tune of what? Third place. They're making the playoffs, like, because they made the playoffs this year.
I'll say they're a top three team next season.
Ooh.
Top three in the West.
Wow.
Yeah, yeah. You want an East Coast sleeper?
New England.
Sure.
No, they're bad.
They got good players and a new coach. Same argument
East Coast,
as San Jose.
Austin.
East
Do you think
Coast.
Austin's first next year?
East Coast, well, it's hard because the East was so much better this year. And actually, like, I don't know. It felt like the East was much stronger than the West. So I guess if I was forced to pick, I would say a lot of the teams are going to regress to the mean. But I think that Orlando is going to overperform their expectations. I think that... clearing Kaká out of there will, you know, kind of freshen things up a bit.
Ewing theory.
And it'll allow them to really develop into the next phase of who they are.
It's going to be New England. Brad Friedel's going to turn them around.
Nah, bruh. Bobby Shuttleworth leading Minnesota.
Minnesota. They might be all right, actually. I'm all right with that hot take.
Yeah. I like that. I think DC United's going to be good. I think we're going to see that thing we've seen the last couple years where, like Colorado a couple years ago, when the GM just went on a shopping spree. I think with the new stadium opening, the ownership group will feel lots of pressure to put a winning product on the field. And so even though they're going to be playing some weird, like Maryland, Annapolis games, Virginia, before the stadium opens, I think they're going to spend some extra coin this year and put some additional people on the field. And it sounds like they got rid of a ton of people in the in their option.
You know, I'm glad that you mentioned that DC process, because I think that if I could pose a question that we could maybe talk about on our next episode, DC's got this new stadium built, which is great because they'd been playing in the raccoon haven of Buzzards Point, RFK, for a while, with kind of bad attendance, like kind of an ugly product. So my question is, let's look through the crystal ball and gaze 4 years into the future. And you were looking at a DC United team playing in this soccer-specific stadium with mediocre attendance and low ratings and, like, consistently, like, not that great in the standings. How would you feel about them moving to St. Louis?
There's no way. They have the most expensive stadium in the league.
If I asked you 4 years ago about the Crew moving, you would have said no way. So I'm just I want you to think
about
it.
I would have been surprised, and then I would have been like, yeah, like, I mean, it's a okay. Anyway, this is a whole nother conversation.
If Preston is being set of teams, you know, getting shuttled around and moved, like hypothetically, how would you feel? Would you feel nostalgic if news broke that DC was getting moved?
Yeah, I mean, I think it would be the same thing. They're one of the winningest teams. They might be still the winningest. I can't remember in the league history. You know, with that run that Bruce Arena went on. So, yeah, I think it's DC for the East and for the West. I like your San Jose prediction. I think this is their year to kind of spend a little bit, but so last topic and then we have to go. Predictions for the second leg and predictions. Well, do you guys want to do an MLS Cup preview pod if the Sounders don't make it?
Yeah. I'll go first.
So we'll just do the next leg. Thursday. Great. Roman Torres out.
Yeah.
Up 2-0. And you have away goals.
Sounders win 2-1. Dempsey gets an early one, 11th minute, off a through ball from Lodeiro. Houston throws everything they have. They get one in minute 70. And then Rodriguez scores the killer on the counter. So Sounders win 2-1. I'm going for the upset in Toronto. I think Columbus is motivated. I think that game's going to be open. 3-2 Columbus. Finals in Precourtville.
Okay.
Sounders.
Will, predictions?
Tie 1-1. And I think I like your Columbus pick, Ben, but I don't think they win it outright. I think that they tie and win on away goals, and I'll say 2-2.
Okay. I'm going to go Sounders lose.
What?
2-1. Excuse me. Hold on. Sounders win 2-1, but they give up the first goal. And so, and it'll be a cagey affair like most of the game. And then 70th minute or so, the Sounders get one and all is like right with the world, then Houston has to open themselves up even more and the Sounders get the second. Jordan Morris coming off the bench with the goal. Just kidding, he's not going to play. But some other player. And then East, I still think it's Toronto. I think there'll be some bullshit calls maybe a little bit against Columbus, and nice. People will do the whole league narrative Good. Thing. Oh, is this like a frame thing or what? Alan Kelly, come on, man. Or whoever the particular ref is. And so I think that one ends up like something like I'll go 2-1 in that one too. I think Toronto gets the first one. Toronto gets the second one, and then Columbus gets another one and tries to go for it and tie it up, but they hit the post or something. So, yeah.
If you could imagine one player from each team to go to the MLS finals that will get a red card and miss the finals.
Oh, Jozy Altidore.
Wait, you mean red card in the next game so they're out for MLS Cup? Well, I think they wipe them.
Not for reds.
Red cards.
Really?
Pretty sure.
Wow. Yeah. Okay.
I mean, you cannot be suspended for yellow card accumulation. But a double yellow.
I mean, Jozy is like such a heel now, but I could see it being Michael Bradley.
Yeah,
and I could see it. I could see it being Dempsey. I mean, that's the easy pick. So I won't pick Dempsey because it's the easy pick. I'll go Roldan. He's been kind of testy.
I know.
Have you guys noticed he's gotten like kind of more of a like dick as the years gone on? I kind of like it.
He's been hanging out with Brad Evans.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, for sure. All right, guys. Agreed. Well, excellent pod. Good luck to the Sounders on Thursday on the second leg. Hopefully we have a wonderful MLS Cup preview pod coming up. Otherwise, we'll do honestly, our best pods are when we're, like, angry about something. So we might have the best pod of the year after the Sounders lose. Your time is up, my time is now. All right, guys. Go Sounders. Talk to you guys later. This is Sam Hardy for the Sounders Radio Hour signing off. In case you forgot or fell off, I'm still hot. Knock your shell off. Right. My money stacked back.
What's going to happen here? Look out!